Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast. I'm Stacey Hagerty, your host and the Vice President of Equity and Inclusion for Envision Rise. Joining us today is growth mindset expert, TEDx speaker, and author of the book Stop and Shift, The Mindset Reset That Changes Everything, Karen Allen. Karen, welcome to the podcast.
Stacey, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
I think we're going to have a good time. So let's get started. I got to know you a little bit before, which was great, but let's have you introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us who you are, what you do, and then we're going to talk growth mindset.
Oh, one of my favorite topics, that's for sure. So hello, listeners. Thanks so much for joining us in this conversation. As Stacey mentioned in the intro, I am a growth mindset expert because my life revolves around how do we build growth mindset? And also, how do we lead with the growth mindset? How do we parent with the growth mindset? And I'll tell you, this is something that wasn't in my vocabulary, but I went through a personal hardship and I started to do these habits and practices intuitively. And thankfully, they changed my life. But they didn't just change my life. They altered my brain chemistry and they helped me to build a resilient mind, which is why I am on fire to talk about the potential that you have inside of your head. And so everything revolves around growth mindset when it comes to my work. But most importantly, as Stacey also mentioned, being the author of this book, Stop and Shift was the first technique that I started to do. It wasn't something anybody told me. I didn't even know what to call it. But after the tragedy of losing my husband, I just knew that I needed to reframe the negative thoughts that were wearing me down. And my life depended on it. And so did my 2-year-old son's life. He needed me to be a happy, healthy, and whole mom. And I was bound and determined to do that. So Stop and Shift is a mental technique, a mental skill that I teach that helps people to learn how to rewire their mindset. And so thanks for being with us in this conversation.
Well, let's first define what a growth mindset is. We usually hear that term in the context of K through 12 education. And it's almost like once you graduate from high school, we don't expect you to have a growth mindset anymore because we never hear it again. Maybe it comes up in a college course once in a while, but it's not something I heard a lot about when I went to my first job, when I grew as a leader, when I, became an executive, those things didn't really come up. So what is growth mindset?
I think that this term has started to come back around, although Dr. Carol Dweck, who's out of Stanford, she's the one who really coined this term based on her research studies. And her research was focused on adolescence. So I think it was as young as maybe 10 years old, but certainly through high school. And so in her research studies, what she was looking for and what she also wanted to create a framework around for individuals to be able to follow this is the understanding that we are not fixed in our ways. And so a lot of times we think, oh, well, maybe you're born with this level of talent. Maybe you just have a certain skill set and that's it. You'll tap out, you'll max out, that's all you get. Well, what Dr. Dweck found was that we have infinite potential inside of us. And the way that we tap into this is through our belief system. So through our mindset, through our thoughts. And so she did some studies where she would have a group of students who maybe didn't believe in themselves. And also they weren't using any kind of mental techniques or skills. And then she would have a different group of students who she was giving them some principles and also some guiding values to help them understand that they can develop whatever skill was, the fixed focus in the study. And so what we found, though, is there's evidence of growth mindset beyond the classroom. And I don't even think our kids are really getting the term growth mindset, although there are a lot of great posters for teachers that help to emphasize what it looks like to have a growth mindset. So before I clearly define that, let me also just mention that, again, the fixed mindset is what's opposite of the growth. That's when you believe that your potential is limited. And also you believe that of others, that what you see in others, that's it. That's all that we get. But the growth mindset is more expansive. And now that we're taking this conversation into corporate America, which is really important, leaders are not just seeing the potential within themselves, but they're seeing it in their team. And that is extremely important because we live in this ever-changing world. So we are constantly learning. We're constantly evolving. We are constantly met with the unknown, and we have to figure out how we're going to get on the other side and be successful. So the conversation now in leadership, and this is where I like to live, is yes, it is about how you're learning, but some of the principles also involve, like, how are we giving feedback? We need to normalize feedback. How are we reframing mistakes to make sure that we don't have any shame, but instead we see them as learning opportunities? So again, I would say that the heart of this really did start with Dr. Dweck's work. I love to see how it's been evolving, and it's now available for shared language in the corporate setting.
You know, the past few years have really brought into sharp focus, at least for me, and I know for a lot of other folks that do this kind of work, how very fixed many of our mindsets are. And when forced into doing something different, and what I'm talking about is, you know, the pandemic. So March 2020, we all got forced out of our habits, out of our usual behaviors, out of our comfort zone.
Out of our offices.
Out of our offices. Our kids got forced out of school and into the living room to go ahead and try to learn that way. And I think for folks that were very much in a fixed mindset, mm-hmm. that was really tough. It was tough on all of us. But then you look at the people who just sort of adopted a growth mindset. Maybe they were naturally that way in some way. Maybe some other folks really dove into finding themselves. Mm-hmm. And they found ways to capitalize on the new reclamation of time, I suppose. You know, when I think about all the people who learned to bake bread and, you know, learned a different language, they did all these things.
Yeah.
And some of it was to stave off boredom, I'm sure. And some of it was almost a survival mechanism. Now, you talked about losing your husband really got you to a place of figuring out how to grow in your mindset, in the way that you believe things are. Mm-hmm. How can somebody who maybe feels a little stuck in their mindset start to stop and shift?
Great plug, Stacey. Great plug. You knew that's where I was going to go too.
Exactly.
Well, when I teach Stop and Shift, one of the main points that, you know, is just at the core of what I'm teaching is that you don't have to have these big, audacious goals to start to make a change. So my shifts are always very small, but there's a saying that I absolutely love, and it's small hinges move big doors. Small hinges move big doors. And when you think about that, you can then translate it to some of the small habits that are going to help create a bigger impact in your life. So when you think about even developing a growth mindset, the first thing that you have to do is be open to a new way of thinking. You have to be open to the fact that you're going to learn something new, that you may not know everything. You have to be open to the fact that someone else's idea could be another great idea that you should pursue. You also have to be open to the fact that even once you learn something, that you might have to learn it again. You have to either fine tune it or maybe things have changed. So the first thing is you have to be open. You have to be open to learning and to growing. But then the next piece is you have to be very intentional. And so my work is really this trifecta of mindfulness, positive psychology, and neuroplasticity. So just to give you a little breakdown of what this looks like, mindfulness is all about being present. This is very important because when we think too much about the past, then we start to feel different things like maybe regret or, you know, I wish I could have or should have or things should have been this way. And so you're living in this alternate reality. You know, you can't change the past, or you're living in the future. So you feel anxious about what's to come. Maybe you feel even worried or fearful. But in those two spaces, again, they're alternate realities. They are, we have no idea what's going to happen and we cannot change what has happened. That was a reality that really struck me as I was navigating the grief of losing my husband in such a traumatic way. And so what I found was that when I'm present, I'm more in control of how I respond to the moment. And that right there is just mindfulness. Mm-hmm. To be mindful is to be fully present in the moment, whether you're enjoying the moment or whether you're problem solving. But you have to be in the moment. You can't live in those alternate realities. And then positive psychology shows us that when you build on, the good gets better, ties directly into growth mindset. We study things in positive psychology like joy and grit. And again, when I lost my husband, and I also experienced a series of other losses, I absolutely believed that I was tapped out of resilience. And I know a lot of people felt that as we mm-hmm. continued throughout the pandemic, you know, 2 weeks turned into 2 months, turned into 2 years, right? And so at some point we all kind of wrestled with, well, how long can I just grin and bear it? How? Mm-hmm. And so again, there are different practices that will help to develop that resilience. And then the last piece is neuroplasticity. And that is key, because when you practice being present, and when you also build on the, you know, the attributes that we all have as humans that help us to flourish, the pattern of building on those habits rewires your brain. Chemically, structurally, functionally, your brain is changing every single time that you adopt a new habit, whether it is a thought pattern or whether it's a physical habit that you're engaging mm-hmm. in your lifestyle. And so the whole key here is, as you're developing a growth mindset, keep in mind that it's a journey, that it does take some time, that, you know, you are rewiring your brain, but you rewire your brain through practice and repetition. The same way we learned how to walk, same way we learned how to do our job. We get better at it through practice and repetition. So regardless of what you're trying to change or grow or implement, through practice and repetition, that's how you get better. And so when I focus on this growth mindset concept, I am very much harnessing the power of that trifecta. So I am intentional about my growth. And it's also how I break it down for individuals. So pick whatever small change you want to make. We're still going to use all three of those areas to make sure that the change lasts, that the growth happens. And along the way, you're developing your confidence to know, hey, if I've done this before, if I've overcome this, if I've changed this, if I've endured this, I can do it again. And that right there is a perfect example of a growth mindset.
So a trait that I've noticed for folks that are really skilled at being in that space of having a growth mindset is not only their willingness to accept feedback, but they're almost assertive or even aggressive sometimes about getting that feedback. That if they've got a big project that they just finished, they want to debrief with their leader and say, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? What could we do better next time? They aren't so focused on the wins. They're more focused on the, I wouldn't call them losses, but you know, learning. The challenges. What's that? Yeah,
the learnings.
Yes. So how do we help people? And I'm thinking about this from the position of a leader who might have feedback that is not necessarily all positive to share with an employee who maybe isn't in a growth mindset. How do we help someone get there? Because it's one thing for us to do the work internally. It's another thing to bring this to the workspace and to bring this into your family or your relationships outside of work and hope that someone will join you on this journey. So from a leadership perspective, how do you work with an employee who's maybe in a very fixed place right now?
Great question. And there's a two-part answer. The first part I'll be short with is that you cannot expect others to be as you are, because you can't control them. You don't know what they're going through. You are a speck in their world. You really have no idea. So to project onto them any kind of expectation that they will rise immediately to, you know, operate with this growth mindset is actually unfair. But to lead by example is what helps them to now see what's possible, right? And so the first part is, do what you know is right as it pertains to leading with a growth mindset, but do not hold others to the same expectation, because again, you may be on the learning journey and maybe they haven't had the opportunity to dive in. But as you lead by example, it is really important when you're giving feedback to normalize feedback and to not make it about a win or a loss. And I'll tell you, I am an athlete. So when you look at the scoreboard, you either win or lose, right? But I had to adjust my mindset to realize that not every situation is about winning and losing, but instead it's about winning or learning, right? And so even if you do fall short, what did you learn from this? And so the way that we can really make sure that that belief is something that everybody can get on board with is when you normalize the whole process of giving and getting feedback. Now, I actually cover this in my LinkedIn course. It's one of the modules within the course. And one of the things that I talk about is we should be giving bite-sized feedback, not just annual reviews. Because my background is actually in HR. And I know as we were mounting up, as we were getting ready, we're going through all the things, you know, for the annual review or even mid-year review, there's a lot of stress that starts to come up in employees, right? And leaders, because you have to give it. And maybe you've been holding on to a piece of feedback that happened 4 months ago. Hopefully not, but that has happened, right? And so when we normalize and create this culture of feedback, then you can give feedback in real time. You can also solicit feedback in real time. As you were talking about, individuals with the growth mindset, they want the feedback. But when you are getting or giving feedback, what's most important is that we keep our intentions at the center of the communication. Our intention is not to make someone feel bad. Shouldn't be to make someone feel bad. Shouldn't be to criticize or embarrass them. What we're trying to do is make sure that we are uplifting them, right? That we are helping them to be the best version of themselves, that we are helping them to grow, and ultimately that we're helping the mission of the organization succeed, right? So you always tie it back to that. Now, when you're giving feedback then, so intentions are really important. And when you have intentions, you're also giving people the benefit of the doubt, right? And so as you're doing this though, you have to give data points. Can't just say, you know, my feedback is that your presentation wasn't great. You could say, I appreciate your effort. I can tell that you tried a lot on this, but you weren't making a lot of eye contact during your presentation, which made us feel that maybe you weren't confident in the delivery. And so we need to make sure that you do feel confident. What can I do to support you or help you? Or you can say, I have this book that helped me, right? So what you're doing there is you're acknowledging their effort upfront. You are giving them some piece of data-specific feedback. It could be a time frame. It could be, again, like something as I just mentioned. And then you're also helping them with some solution, some give that says, I'm not just leaving you here in this low point, but I'm in it with you to help you develop and to rise to the occasion. So feedback, you have to normalize it, but there's also, you know, this flow that you want to make sure you're doing it in a very human-centric way so that the person doesn't shut down, but instead they remain open and then they can grow from that space.
You know, I think that human-centric piece is so important for anything that you're doing, but especially during feedback. And the other piece of this is you've got to, you mentioned, you know, not waiting for a yearly or a mid-year review to give feedback to people. And whether that's positive feedback or feedback that is maybe not so positive, but offers an opportunity for growth and learning, you've got to have a relationship with your employees. And that relationship building is so important. And it's something that at Envision Rise, we talk about a lot. We talk about it in terms of equity, in terms of inclusion, that someone's going to be much more willing to accept your feedback if they feel like they're a part of the team and that this is not an effort to continue to push them out or not include them or make them feel as if they aren't good enough for the team or for the organization. So how would you recommend that not only leaders, but also employees make that inclusive culture part of what they do every single day so that when those times happen where there's a learning moment, that it doesn't feel so personal, that it feels as intended as an opportunity to grow and learn as opposed to having someone walk out of that meeting feeling like I'm a terrible person. They're going to fire me. I'm awful. You know, all those terrible things we can think if we don't already feel included within the organization and the department.
One thing I'm going to repeat, we can't control other people. So if they do walk out feeling that way, right, we don't want to hold on to that because everybody's on their own individual journey, but we can do something in the delivery. And one piece of it is actually what you mentioned is feedback shouldn't just be when somebody did something wrong. Feedback also has to be when they do something great. If they crush the presentation, let them know. And again, use data points. Hey, you made great eye contact. You know, I was really confused about something, but then your next slide gave us the data points that we needed. I really appreciated your intention during Q&A. Like, give solid, positive feedback and the criticism as well, right? When we do need to offer that. Now, when you're doing both, now you're creating this openness, right? When you create openness in communication, even if you thought about how do I create a healthy relationship outside of work, wouldn't communication be one of the pillars? Like, we have good communication. I can talk to you about the great stuff and the hard stuff, but your delivery does matter. And so when you are talking to someone, it depends on how strong the relationship is, but there's never a bad time to start with, hey, I have some feedback and this feedback is for your growth. I want you to know my intention and my heart is to help you be your best. Just meet them in the moment, right? Human to human, heart to heart, something I express with my leaders all the time. If you can meet them in the moment, even if you have to deliver harsh feedback, you can say, I'm going to share this with you and I know it might be hard to receive, but this is not a reflection of your overall work. This is a reflection of this moment that we need to address. And so I'm in this with you. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get through it. And then we're going to come up with an action plan to make sure that you continue to be successful because I value you on this team and I value what you're contributing to the organization. So let's get into the mess and then we'll get on the other side together, right? If you were to just talk to a friend like that, don't you think they would be receptive? But the problem can be that we are able to cultivate healthy relationships that are personal, but we haven't been given the skills how to cultivate those healthy relationships that are also professional. Good news, leaders who are listening to this, and you're going to get this inside scoop. The same skills that you use to build healthy relationships at home and personally are the same skills you're going to use in the workplace. So when you are talking to that person, talk to them human to human, heart to heart. It's okay for you to start off with something that I suggested, but it's most important that person feels safe, that they feel heard, that they also can share things that maybe you didn't know, right? But the strength of your relationship isn't just built in one moment. It's built in many moments over time. So if you are going into a moment and maybe you all haven't developed the relationship, again, make sure that you are keeping this open kind of communication using open language, that you're meeting them in the moment, but continue to also follow up with that because this isn't like a quick change, right? Whenever we talk about culture stuff and whenever we talk about mindset, it is not a quick change. But as I mentioned before, those small hinges will move big doors. So even if you start small, it can make a powerful impact.
Somewhere along the way, I'm not sure how this even came to be, but it seems that we have trained managers who have then turned into leaders and executives. We've told them that you should never show emotion. You should never, you know, reveal any part of yourself to your employees. That is somehow unprofessional. Yet look what we end up doing to our employees. And I think it's such a, I heard this great example that, you know, when you're sending a meeting invitation for a meeting that doesn't normally happen, so sort of a one-off, and maybe it happened after a big presentation or after a big project or the end of the quarter, don't just send a meeting invitation with no context and then have that person be stressed out for the next 3 days about, am I getting fired on Friday? Am I getting written up? What's going on? If it's good news, say, you know, hey, brief meeting, great news. Or if it's not such good news, hey, brief meeting, little bit of feedback, something along those lines so that people aren't just left to their own devices to make up what's going on. Our brains are not often kind to us with those kinds of things.
It is negative by default. Yes.
Yeah, we just assume that the really horrible thing's going to happen. And how many times has that happened? Even in my own life, when I think about meetings that I've had with supervisors and other leaders where I've thought, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And it turns out that it's nothing. And then I'm mad that I, you know, wasted all this time and energy being worried and upset and out there wondering, do I need to redo my resume? When really it was something small that ended up not being a big deal. Mm-hmm. What are some other little things that we can start doing to build that better communication in our professional lives that might help show our employees and show our colleagues that this is the way we want to go with the relationship? And it may feel a little vulnerable and may feel a little strange at first, but it's going to help in the end.
Oh, yeah, that's a really great question. You know, Google did this study called Project Aristotle years ago. And what they wanted to do is they wanted to study the most productive and efficient teams. And so they went through this whole study, but various groups, various, you know, parts of the organization. And so as they were going through, they found something really interesting. You know, they thought it was going to be maybe systems or processes, you know, and what they found was empathy. The most highly productive teams, the most innovative teams even, had empathy as a through line throughout their team. And they found this one leader in particular. He had shared with his team that he was diagnosed with cancer a few months before. And he could have said, hey, I'm going to be out of the office a little bit, but he needed them to know because he was going to be out of the office for, you know, different appointments or what have you. And his team was not one of the most successful, yet they became that after he shared this. And that opened them all up to just see each other as human. And I think actually, you know, thinking back to the pandemic, that is one of the blessings that came out of that time was we could not run away from the distractions behind us, the dogs, the kids, you know, the anything that was happening. And because we were now operating in each other's homes, we were able to see that, wow, we're not just the job title that we hold or the list of responsibilities on our job description. We're people. And that is really, really important. So there are very subtle ways that you can just stay connected as humans. You know, it could be in the way that you communicate, but it could even be in how you start a meeting. Put your phone down, close the laptop, come into the meeting and ask everybody to share something. You can pick, you know, a random icebreaker, right? If you could have a superpower, what would it be? What's your favorite dessert? What's the last movie you watched with your kids? Anybody have any good ideas for camping? I mean, again, the same conversation that you would have with friends and family now connects you in this way where people don't just see you as a job title, but they see you as a person. And now when you have to come into a meeting and maybe you do have to talk about something hard, you have this different connection. It's the connection that we all know is there, but we don't always lean into it. And it's a commonality that we are just all human, right? And so with that, then you can now say, hey, we've created a space to connect as people. And now we are also able to connect on some work stuff as well. But when we only connect on the work items, we become very robotic. We become very disengaged. You know, we don't feel anything about the person across the table. And I'm not saying they have to be your bestie. I'm not saying that you have to talk about all of the, you know, personal things, but you do want to be able to see one another as people and not just a job title. And it's those small little things that you can connect on, whether it's a favorite something or, you know, idea about a vacation. But even when you keep it brief, it can be impactful.
Small hinges move big doors. I'm going to be
love that one.
I love it. Well, I think this is an excellent place for us to wrap up. We're almost out of time. Karen, where can people find your book? Where can they find out more about you? Where can they engage your services?
Well, if you head over to the website, KarenAllen.co, that's KarenAllen.co, we actually just launched the brand new brand and the brand new website. So browse around as an individual, as a leader, as an organization, you'll find everything that you need to engage with my content and the teaching. So thank you so much, Stacey, for having me on the show. This was so much fun and the time flew by.
It really did. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. There's some great stuff. I'm over here taking notes while we're talking. And for those of you who would like more information about Envision Rise, you can find us at envisionrise.com. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Stacey.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, and be a part of making a difference because it starts with you.